welcome, and thanks for joining us for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas this week. We'll talk about the Christmas tree industry on today's show with our Sabrina Halverson. She'll also tell you why monarch butterflies are sparking debates in agriculture. In other farm news, CJ Miller shares why you don't need to follow through on that Corporate Transparency Act filing for now, and how USDA is working to prevent cattle screwworm from making a reappearance in the U.S. And I'll have newly re-elected Indiana Farm Bureau President Randy Crone coming up in just a few minutes on why he doesn't expect what's happening in Illinois with their Farm Bureau organization to ever happen here. Andy Eubank will have grain market analysis on the way shortly, and Ryan Martin provides his Indiana farm forecast right after that. Let's begin with a Hoosier Ag Today exclusive. We learned late Wednesday night that Governor-elect Mike Braun and Lieutenant Governor-elect Micah Beckwith made the decision to stick with Don Lamb as director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. Lamb will work with Beckwith, who will serve as the state's new Secretary of Agriculture. And Lamb tells Hoosier Ag Today that he's honored and grateful for the opportunity to serve, but it's not just him.
I'm super proud of our team, and when I think about being asked to serve again in this role, I really look at that as ISDA was asked to continue to serve. It's a team thing. You know, I may get to be more like the quarterback, but it's a team effort, and I've got so many good people around me at ISDA that we're really hitting on all cylinders, and we enjoy working together.
Lamb succeeded Bruce Kettler as ISDA director in March of 2023, knowing that he might have just over a year and a half in the position, depending on how things worked out with the election. He says they'll continue to drive home the importance of economic development for agriculture.
If agriculture is not profitable, we really can't do many of the other things that are so good for agriculture and our communities. So lots of effort into international trade. And part of that's because 20% of our farm income comes from exports. And so that's such an important part of what we do that we have to keep an eye on that. So we're going to continue to be aggressive on international trade.
Lamb has already traveled to Japan, Cuba, and Mexico in his short tenure as ISDA director to promote Indiana products. On the other side of the coin is promoting products at home. With the rapid growth of the Indiana Grown program housed inside ISDA.
And you think about the products that we produce right here locally in a county and then maybe sell it in that same county. And how do we get those products into schools? How do we get those products into hospitals and institutions? And the whole idea of local food is not a fad, and it's just a market that really needs to be developed.
You can hear my full interview with Lamb about his vision for ISDA and the working relationship with the Braun-Beckwith administration at HoosierAgToday.com. Now, last weekend, while you were listening to this show, Indiana Farm Bureau was holding their annual state convention in French Lick. Randy Crone was reelected as the organization's president at their annual meeting on Saturday. He ran unopposed.
Hey, it's an honor to be able to serve such a great organization. And, you know, when I was on stage and you look across all our county leaders, and I'm humbled by their support and giving me the ability to be able to lead. And, you know, when I think about this and all the work we've got ahead of us, from water issues to property tax to trying to get a farm bill passed, there's a heavy workload, but I am happy to lead this organization. But it takes all of us together to make change.
Crone was first elected to the role of INFB president in 2015. Prior to that, he served for 14 years as the organization's vice president, with this three-year term putting him up over 25 years of leadership to INFB. I asked him how much longer he was looking to serve.
I think the good Lord will give us a sign of when it's time to maybe turn the reins over to somebody else, but we'll evaluate that here in a year or two when it's needed.
Crone told Hoosier Ag Today the weekend was full of celebrating successes and accomplishments. Indiana Farm Bureau has experienced 9 continuous years of membership growth, with this year being the largest one-year growth since 2002. He credits the existing membership for the work done there. Given what's happening right now with Illinois Farm Bureau, Crone did comment on the value of the partnership with Indiana Farm Bureau Insurance.
I am proud here in Indiana, the relationship we have with Indiana Farm Bureau Insurance. And I serve as president of both organizations. I attend a lot of meetings, but their leadership is very supportive and we work together. I think the synergies of the two of us working together make us better on both sides. And I'm proud of that. And, you know, I've had multiple conversations with Kevin Murphy, the CEO of the insurance company, and he will tell you the same thing, that being together is better. So what's happening to the state to the west of us, I'm confident it won't happen here in Indiana because we see the benefit.
Crone went on to say that if for some reason that partnership was ever terminated, it would be a huge mistake that they would ultimately regret. More farm news on the way, and Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin has his Indiana Farm Forecast on the way. Right now, let's turn our attention to the markets. Andy Eubank has those. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Eric. A change in tone for the soybean futures market on Thursday and Friday. Another higher day on Friday. We'll have those numbers coming up. Market analysis first. I grabbed that during the trading session from Brian Basting, Advanced Trading. The market's higher as we head into the weekend. Pretty green on the board, Brian. Beans the last couple of days leading the way after a slow downfall. Fall there, so a nice recovery.
Well, thanks for having me, Andy. It's always good visiting with you. And we did see a recovery in beans. It really was a catastrophic decline there on Wednesday. New contract lows in beans and soybean meal, too. We saw a multi-year low, as a matter of fact, in nearby soybean meal. So we may be seeing some short covering here going into the weekend. It does look like it's going to be a rainy pattern in Brazil. Remember, I'd remind your listeners that we are in pod set and pod fill stage, and actually just very, very early harvest in far northern Brazil, but it's so small, it's not hardly worth mentioning. But it is pod set and pod fill, and rain is a good time, but the market built that in, apparently, and it is a little bit of a unsettled pattern for Argentina. By that, I mean it's not quite as ideal that further south. A little bit warmer, a little bit drier. Their beans are not in that pod set and pod fill stage yet, but it's something to be monitoring as we move into January. That'll be a critical month for those early beans, double crop beans, more so in February and March, but maybe just enough uncertainty there to give us some short covering on beans. Decent export sales report there yesterday, but I think, the beans have recovered a bit here. Corn continues to be stout, nice recovery this week. Continue to see good export business, another flash sale this morning to Colombia for some U.S. corn, and so steady as she goes as far as the export market continues to look strong. We are seeing some fund buying. Funds have moved to a longer position on corn, Andy, compared to recent months where they had been very aggressively short for quite some time. Now, I don't want to play that up too much, but it's just something to be aware of. We'll get an update again here this afternoon. But I'd remind your listeners from a strategy standpoint, Andy, that as we get into the 25 calendar year here, there's going to be a lot of surprises in 25. Just keep your marketing flexible as possible. You want to be engaged in the markets. You want to leave the upside open, but also defend your balance sheet by keeping a floor underneath these prices.
You're not really predicting anything different in the coming year when you say a lot of surprises. It seems like that's the rule of thumb these days.
You know, in all seriousness, Andy, I just wrote a wire this morning that I write every year about this time, and it was easy to pick out a major surprise each year. And this year for 2024, it was the fact that China had a much larger crop a year ago in 23 than we thought. That was revealed in the January WASD report. Therefore, their needs fell off a cliff. China had been a major importer of U.S. corn.
That is economist Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. Brian's number is 309-664-2314. More numbers now. The final ones from trade on Friday. Up a nickel and a half for the March and May corn contracts. March 446 and a quarter, May 451 and three quarters. January beans 11 and a half higher, 974 and a half. March 979 and a quarter, up 12 and three quarters. March wheat fell back to unchanged at 533. May 542 and three quarters, down three quarters. February live cattle 188.40, up $1.85. February lean hogs ending at $85.92, up $2.30. There's a look at the markets. Much more still to come on the weekend show. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
From the Farm Bill to foreign farmland ownership and international trade, ag policy is having a big impact on Indiana farming operations. The Hoosier Ag Today Indiana Ag Policy Podcast provides in-depth coverage on these and many other important and complex issues. Get the details behind the headlines with the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, hosted by Eric Pfeiffer. You can find it at HoosierAgToday.com, the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app, and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Cold air dominates this weekend, but we are looking at a significant warm-up for Christmas. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. The weekend is definitely a cold one. We had a clipper system move through yesterday, gave us some on-again, off-again snow across the area. Lingering snow showers today are mostly coming from lake effect. So it's in far northern parts of the state, northwest Indiana. That's the only spot that we see this at any kind of a problem. You get up into Michigan and you got some lake effect for sure. But the most of the state here dealing with clouds and sunshine and cool temperatures for your Saturday. Better sunshine potential as we move through tomorrow, but the cold air still stays here as high pressure is in control. We start to get on the backside of that high on Monday. South flow will start to come up and that will help moderate temperatures through the day on Monday. I do think that temperature moderation brings a few clouds, particularly late Monday afternoon into Tuesday. What we've got is the warm air coming up behind the backside of high pressure, and we've also got another minor clipper coming out of the upper Midwest and into Michigan. The two combine, and you end up injecting a little bit of moisture into this weather system. And so I think overnight, Monday night into Tuesday, we have to leave the door open to sprinkles and even a few wet snowflakes coming through Indiana. Ohio definitely sees snow through the Tuesday time frame, Christmas Eve. I don't think Indiana sees a lot. I'm just sounding the alarm for a little bit of moisture and then lingering clouds through Tuesday as temperatures continue to moderate. Christmas Day is going to be warm, above normal temperatures, and so that means it's a little bit sloppy, but all things considered, no major problems for travel. We are warm for Christmas Day, and we are definitely going to be seeing the warmth finish the week as well. Thursday stays warm with mixed clouds and sun. Friday, increasing and thickening clouds, and we do see a little bit of rain trying to move into the Hoosier State by late afternoon and early evening. The rain can continue into early Saturday. I'm going to say in areas from I-70 south, up to a half an inch of moisture. I-70 north, a few hundreds to a few tenths, that is all. Right now, I think there could be rain that lingers on Saturday, but models are starting to divest themselves from that just a little bit. So clouds at least on Saturday were mild for sure. Sunday is dry and partly to mostly sunny. Same story for early next week, Monday the 30th, with clouds increasing Monday night. We do see some scattered rain and thunderstorm activity for New Year's Eve. Coverage only about 40%, though, and we follow that up with a frontal passage on New Year's Day that ushers in colder air for New Year's night right on through the 2nd and 3rd. We see a little bit of lake effect with that cold air, but not a lot of precipitation, just shifting temperatures back down to normal and below normal levels for that first full week of January. I'm Ryan Martin.
Well, we've survived another year. Another growing season, another election cycle, and plenty of market volatility. All of us at Hoosier Ag Today are proud that we've been able to keep you informed of the latest farm news, markets, and weather developments in 2024, and honored that once again you have made us the most listened to farm network in the state. On air and online, and ready for 2025, we are Hoosier Ag Today.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. Merry Christmas from all of us here at Hoosier Ag Today. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. Thanks for joining us this weekend. Monarch butterflies, iconic pollinators vital to ecosystems, face a new crossroads with a move that could reshape conservation efforts and spark debate over balancing environmental protections with agricultural interests. Sabrina Halverson reports.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is proposing to list the monarch butterfly as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act. They are seeking public input on species-specific protections and flexibilities to encourage conservation. The proposal has received mixed responses. Texas Commissioner of Agriculture Sid Miller criticized it as federal overreach. However, Josette Lewis, Vice President and Chief Scientific Officer for the Almond Board of California, views the listing as an opportunity for growers to demonstrate agriculture's role in fostering biodiversity.
It's an opportunity for growers to show that agriculture is part of the solution to native pollinators.
Monarch Joint Venture Executive Director Wendy Caldwell notes that while the decision marks a significant milestone in conservation, it raises complex regulatory questions due to the monarch's widespread habitat.
And so that's a lot of, I think, what the concern around the back and forth dialogue is around. What does this mean for me and my land? And since monarchs and possible monarch habitat could be really everywhere. So it's just such a complicated topic. That's why the decision, I think, as we're navigating the information that they put out in this proposal, really calls for public comment. And they want to hear from all these different perspectives of how can we help shape a balanced ruling that helps to further monarch conservation without becoming so restrictive that people are not going to participate at all.
The organization encourages public participation during the comment period. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
Thank you, Sabrina. Congressman-elect Mark Messmer, representing Indiana's 8th District, will soon be joining fellow Hoosier Congressman Jim Baird, who represents the 4th District, on the House Ag Committee in the 119th Congress. The House Republican Steering Committee selects the Republican members who will serve on the House Ag Committee, but the recommendations are subject to approval by the House Republican Conference. The House Ag Committee will remain chaired by Glenn G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania. There is a change at the top for Democrats. They voted to make Minnesota Representative Angie Craig the new ranking member on the Republican-controlled House Ag Committee. She beat out longtime legislator Jim Costa of California, who is also vying for the seat. She replaces David Scott of Georgia, the previous ranking member. He wanted to remain in the position, but he was considered to be having health challenges and not able to effectively operate as the top Democratic member of the Ag Committee moving forward. If you've been a cattle producer for a long time, you might remember the last time that the New World screwworm harmed livestock here in the U.S., though it's been a while ago. C.J. Miller reports how USDA is working to prevent the pest from making a comeback.
$165 million in emergency commodity credit corporation funding to be able to protect U.S. livestock from New World screwworm.
And that's Jenny Moffitt, USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs. The New World screwworm is a fly that has a gory way of harming cattle. The female lays their eggs in open wounds or body orifices, and when the larvae hatch, they burrow deep into the skin like a screw driving into wood. These maggots feed on cattle tissue, causing much larger wounds as they go.
We had it here in the United States in the early and mid-1900s, and then over the course of several decades, in a very collaborative approach with Mexico and with many countries in Central America, actively worked to push down that pest out of the United States and then out of Mexico and then through Central America and down to Panama.
And that was done through a sterilization program that eradicated screwworms in the U.S. in 1960. But Moffitt says the pests have recently been spreading across Central America, and just last month, screwworms were discovered in a cow in southern Mexico.
So we have been, for the past year and a half, really ramping up our work and taking a much more bigger regional approach than we have been for several decades.
She says USDA is using these emergency funds to use the sterile insect technique once again to kill off the screwworm before it returns to the U.S.
We're currently producing about 90 million flies a week and really increase the production of flies, increase the dispersal and the range of dispersal of flies.
Because of the screwworm, imports of beef from Mexico have been suspended since late November. I'm C.J. Miller.
What do farmers want to do? Well, they want to make more money. They want to be more efficient with what they want to do. They really want to have a partner out in the business to help them do that.
That's James Schertz, president of Great Plains Ag, telling us how they're ready to partner with farmers like you to help solve industry challenges and adapt to shifting markets to provide the necessary equipment to farm efficiently.
Well, since 1976, Great Plains has been providing the best seeding, box drills, air drills, and tillage solutions, TerraMax, TurboMax, that are kind of the market names out there for really being able to provide those best solutions based off of agronomics for the customers.
Schertz admits that inflation pressures have been tough on farmers and ag businesses alike in recent years.
The cost of inputs, cost of manufacture, cost of labor is significantly up. But what Great Plains has done is we've held steady for almost 3 years now. Minimal pricing to no pricing on most of the products because we understand we need to make a profit, yes, as a company, but it's really, we can't pass those burdens on to our dealers and their customers.
During these more difficult times, Great Plains Ag hasn't stopped innovating, making sure their customers have exactly what they need.
If you look at like our BD7600 box drill, simple box drill, but it has the capabilities for variable rate application, has the ability to seed from soybeans up to, you know, low rate products up to high rate products, really going into a lot of cover crop applications in your neck of the woods that we just haven't seen before because we've been able to adapt the product to fit these market needs.
Schertz encourages you to visit greatplainsag.com to see what equipment they have to offer, including their tillage equipment, and to find a dealer location near you.
Oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
More Hoosier Ag this week coming up. Merry Christmas from Hoosier Ag Today.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
What are you hearing are some of the challenges that are beginning to emerge that you feel like, hey, innovation could tackle these?
Farmers face significant pressure to produce more food, yet input costs are rising, farming acreage is decreasing, access to skilled labor is decreasing, and farming generally is just filled with uncertainty. So we are seeing this paradigm and demand shift to drive farmer productivity, income, and overall more confidence in farming outcomes. And so this means more emphasis on agronomy, less focus on bigger, but rather the right machine or machines, demand for more proactive and less reactive operations, and less variability and more repeatability.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Merry Christmas from all of us here at Hoosier Ag Today. I'm CJ Miller, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week. Well, there's been a lot of drama among your lawmakers in Washington, D.C. Earlier this past week, congressional leaders had introduced a spending bill which would have continued to extend the 2018 Farm Bill. It also would have allowed the year-round sale of E15 fuel, and it would have also provided $10 billion in emergency aid to farmers. But by Wednesday evening, President Trump and Elon Musk were encouraging lawmakers not to pass the spending bill out of concerns that there was just way too much spending in it, and so the bill went nowhere. For all the latest updates concerning the chaos on Capitol Hill, you can check out our website, HoosierAgToday.com. Well, if you're a farmer or a small business owner, you're off the hook regarding the Corporate Transparency Act. Well, for now.
The rollout of this has been a flop on behalf of the Treasury Department.
And that's Kent Backus, Executive Director of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. A few weeks ago, a federal court in Texas said the Corporate Transparency Act was likely unconstitutional, so it issued a preliminary injunction barring the government from enforcing it. It requires farmers and small businesses to file what's called a Benefit Ownership Information Report, which means you would be required to give confidential information to the U.S. Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN for short.
If the court determines that preliminary injunction should be lifted, then FinCEN could go ahead and start enforcing this right away. So it's important that people continue to pay close attention to this.
Backus offers this advice for farmers and small business owners.
For your personal operation, this is the time to really talk to your advisors, to your tax preparers, to your attorneys, and find out that if this moves forward, is this something that you will need to comply with.
If the law does go into effect, it would impact more than 32 million small businesses, and the failure to comply would be a fine of $10,000 or possible jail time.
But ultimately, it is going to take an act of Congress to go back and amend this to make it right and to not create a criminal class out of so many small businesses.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, do you remember the Christmas tree that Charlie Brown had picked out in that old Charlie Brown Christmas special? You don't want that tree. No, you want a big, beautiful, real Christmas tree in your home, don't you? Well, Sabrina Halverson reports how producing those perfect Christmas trees have become more and more challenging.
The U.S. Christmas tree industry is a vital and resilient sector, providing about $2.5 billion in annual revenue, according to Justin Whitehill, assistant professor at North Carolina State University and director of its Christmas tree genetics program. With about 15,000 growers across the nation, Christmas trees are cultivated in every state, with key production areas in Michigan, Oregon, and North Carolina. Despite its successes, he says the industry faces mounting challenges from climate change.
We're seeing more drought occurring for longer periods of time, and that drought is really putting a little bit more stress on the Christmas trees, which makes them a little more susceptible to either diseases or pests that maybe are kept at bay under normal conditions. And when the stress kind of accumulates, that's when those things start to ramp up, and that causes more challenges for our growers.
He also highlights the long-term commitment involved in Christmas tree farming.
Once they reach the field, if you want a 6 to 8 foot tall tree, we're talking anywhere between 6 to 8 years of growth. And that's on top of the 2 to 4 years that we've already had happening in the greenhouse and in the transplant beds. So it's a long-term investment that our growers are really committed to. And I think it's important that folks realize that we can't just develop trees or grow a tree within a year. We have to plan for 10 years down the road what our crop is going to look like.
Efforts are underway to mitigate such challenges through research into pest and disease resistance, as well as collaborations with growers nationwide. On a positive note, real Christmas trees offer environmental benefits, being biodegradable and recyclable. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
And over $12,000 was raised for Riley Hospital for Children during the Ringside for Riley fundraiser that was held during the Hoosier Beef Conference earlier this month. The event was the dream of 11-year-old Cataly Butcher, a lifelong patient at Riley Hospital. You see, she was born with a very rare 1-in-a-million heart defect and has had multiple surgeries and stays at Riley Hospital. She decided to combine her love for showing cattle with her desire to give back to Riley Hospital and to show support for other kids facing challenges just like her. You can read the full story at our website, HoosierAgToday.com. And with that, it's time to put a big Christmas bow on another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any part of today's show, feel free to download the podcast version. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. On behalf of all of us here at Hoosier Ag Today, we certainly wish you and all of your loved ones a very Merry Christmas and safe travels this coming week. From our award-winning team of Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, Sabrina Halverson, our chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, also our director of sales and affiliate relations, Molly Nichols, and Hoosier Ag Today's founder, Gary Truitt, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.